best, and you got it. The hottest band in the land.
Kiss.
Oh, yeah.
It's time to talk about Kiss, people.
Hey, welcome to our first extra special show that I believe we're calling Sidetracks.
Yes, and I wonder what today is about.
Iron Maiden.
Today we're going to talk about Kiss.
Kiss.
Yeah, there we go. Ack. We'll do all the... Peter doesn't have a thing, though. Because mainly...
His would be like... Yeah, fuck off.
Yeah, probably. Grumpy.
I'm a hooligan.
I'm a hooligan. Okay, we'll refrain from just singing Kiss songs. Maybe. Hey, the reason we decided to do... Well, first of all, the reason we decided to do a thing called Sidetracks is because if you've listened to season one... Hello. Hello, microphone stand. If you listen to season one of our podcast, Feedback and Forth, you probably realize that we have a really hard time staying on topic.
Yes.
So we decided a cool thing to do would be to do these little extra bits where we talk about some of the topics that don't necessarily have to do with the band, but are still kind of important to us.
Yes, in the hopes of keeping us on track.
More or less.
On topic.
Yeah. Really. And they'll be a little shorter than... the podcast, which have gotten wildly out of control. Although we say that. But the good thing about these is, Mike mentioned off mic earlier, if we do get too long with these, we can just chop them, make it part one, part two. So this might be Kiss part one.
Yes.
I have a feeling it will
God
be.
God knows how many parts.
Yeah. But it needs to be talked about because without... Kiss, we may not be here.
That's true.
Because
I mean, really, when you think about it, without Kiss, the Northwest scene in the 90s might have been at least a little different.
Yeah, it's funny how okay it was to like Kiss up here when it was kind of not cool really anymore.
No.
Or you know, in air quotes, not cool. But I think just about every major band that came out of here,
yep,
cites Kiss as some kind of influence. And we knew that, well, it was kind of brought to my attention when we got into the Melvins, because they were unabashed huge Kiss fans.
Well, yeah, it's like, you look at Buzz's Les Paul and he's got the Rock and Roll Over cover down by the bridge.
Yep, right on there. At first I was like, ooh, he defaced a Les Paul. but it was Kiss, so it was okay. And you wouldn't hear it necessarily, in especially the early Melvins, as a musical influence. But when we read interviews with them and stuff, they were always name-dropping them. And
I guess if you listen to like Buzz's singing, especially... at the beginning, he did try and do a Gene.
It is a little Gene-like. Yeah, he's got that. I'm not going to do it. But it's true. And I think they thank Kiss on their first album.
I wouldn't be surprised.
And they thank everybody. And Matt Lukin had the Kiss strap, the bass strap. So, yeah. But come to find out, pretty much every band seems like. I think the... Pearl Jam, one of the, or maybe both the Pearl Jam guitarists have played with Ace Frehley, or did, I think they did some, like a live show, or Ace had one of them come out or something, so.
Wow, lucky those guys.
Yeah, so even the, like.
Get to play with the coolest member of
Kiss.
Yes,
and we'll talk about that. We will rank the members of Kiss.
By makeup, by costumes.
We could do that. Okay, this is definitely part one. But, and actually, Kiss literally did bring us together because of those Kiss cards, which if you haven't heard, I forget what episode it is, two or three of Feedback and Forth, our podcast, go check that out. But Kiss cards.
For $1.
That's the title of it, right? But in middle school, I had a bunch of Kiss bubblegum cards that I was selling, and Mike was looking to buy.
That's right.
We didn't know each other yet. So.
I only had some.
Yeah.
You know, for anybody who didn't know what these are, they are like a pack of, what, like 7 cards?
Something like that, yeah.
Came in a... like a package that also had, you know, air quotes all over the place, gum in them.
A hard stick of bubble gum that you
didn't want to chew because they would break apart in your mouth.
It was sharp.
But they had the really cool Kiss cards of like either all cool. of them or like some of them or individual.
Yeah, some were live and some were obviously posed, but...
had like a puzzle that you got to put together.
Yeah, that's right.
You flip them over and put them all together.
Yeah. Some of them had info on the back. So I remember that was the first time I read that Ace actually claimed to be from outer space and stuff. So like, wow. But we get ahead of everything a little bit.
We're getting sidetracked on the sidetrack.
Because we're so excited about to talk about Kiss. I can't remember how much, I know we talked about it a little on the podcast, but I forget what got recorded and what we were just talking about. But as far as the first time getting into Kiss, so we might, sorry everybody, we might be covering ground you've already heard, but who wants to go first?
Well, I remember the first time I actually, saw them.
Yeah.
I was on the school bus, and I think it was on the way to school.
Yeah.
No, maybe it was after school because I remember somebody. No, it was on the way because I remember they got on the bus and they were in the back.
Yeah.
And they were calling somebody else like in the middle or something, you know, because I was younger.
Yeah.
I wasn't cool enough to sit anywhere from the middle to the back. And they held up Alive 2.
Ooh, wow.
And it was the back.
Yeah,
you know, with the bigger individual pictures of them,
right?
Awesome
album cover.
Montage or whatever.
Yeah,
and I remember looking at it and I'm going, "Ah, so it's a band with one guy and 3 women
in makeup." Funny.
Because I was like, oh, Gene has to be a guy. He's got the blood and
I'm going to break in just for a second because when I saw the cover of Kiss Alive 2. I actually thought it was 3 guys, but I thought Ace was a woman. So we both thought there was at least 1 female in the band. That's hilarious.
But yeah, I've never seen that. I was just kind of like, whoa, what is that? That looks interesting.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is what, 1977, 78?
77, yeah.
You know, it's like there was no internet, obviously.
Right.
So it's like finding out about who the hell. I mean, you could tell who it was because, you know, the logo.
Yeah, it was huge.
Everywhere, all over, back front, inside. They really knew how to market themselves.
Yes, they did.
But yeah, I think I had to like ask my sister and she's like, oh, yeah, band. And
yeah.
And then, yeah, it must have been 77 because she ended up getting me, I think, the next year for my birthday. Double Platinum.
Oh, yeah. Nice.
Which was my first Kiss record.
Is that the one you still have? Or one you had when I... Yeah.
I still have it. Still the original. You can tell it's like a... You know, it's like it's silver with like raised...
Yeah.
You know, their name.
It's like embossed or whatever.
Yeah. And then like on the inside, it's got individual... Because it's a double record, of course. But yeah, I'd always take paper and I'd get a pencil and I'd... trying to get the faces.
See what they look like without makeup. Yeah.
While I'm listening to the record on headphones.
Nice.
My dad did not like
it. Yeah. We'll get into some of that too. Yeah. I think it was 70. Well, I do remember seeing them on the first time I saw Kiss was on the Paul Lynde Halloween special, which I think we did talk about a little bit. And I was that was 1976 and I was just blown away. I was like, I didn't know what that was, but I love Paul Lynn and Witchy Poo and all the other weird stuff that was on there. But yeah, here's this band, and we've talked about this on the podcast, but I wasn't into rock and roll or hard rock at all, for mm-hmm. sure. I was hearing country and church music mostly at home.
And Sean Cassidy.
Yeah, and stuff like that, like pop, teen idol stuff, a little bit. But yeah, so I saw that, but it hit me when I saw it, but I don't think it stuck with me necessarily. But so it was 77 for me as well when I first really like knew who they were.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was fourth grade. And I remember Robert Thomas, who we both know, brought Destroyer to school. And I got to see an album up close, you know, and I was like, whoa. And I think, and we might have talked about this too, but I used to look at the records at the local Yelm store, mm-hmm. general department store, Wolf's. And I would always look at, they had Alive 2. And yeah. That's where I saw it, got to see the cover up close. So I would just stare at that and be like, whoa. But Robert brought Destroyer to school. And again, I was blown away just looking at it. I think it really, I know there's a lot of Kiss hate out there.
Mm-hmm.
And I get it, you know. But also, I think if you were our age at that time, it was just like the perfect thing.
Yeah.
Because I was already into comic books and monster movies. So even though I wasn't into rock and roll, once I saw Kiss, I was like, whoa, it looked like a comic book monster yeah. movie, you know? So I bugged Robert to let me borrow the record and he did. And I took it home and I played it on those little portable record players mm-hmm. we all used to have. Look it up on the internet if you don't know what it is. Probably mono. I don't know if they had those were stereo or not. But anyway, played it on there and I played it over and over. And somehow, though, before the night was over, I broke the record. I broke a hole through it, which is a weird way to break a record.
You were suddenly like, I have to build something. Oh, damn it.
I forgot to move the record. But yeah, it was ruined, basically. And so, or at least one song. I think I asked my dad for advice on what to do. And he was like, well, you have to replace it, you know, because my dad's very honest and good, you know. So he's like, you got to make up for the bad thing you did. So I took all my allowance and went to Wolf's department mm-hmm. store. Only this time, the only Kiss record they had was Alive, not Alive 2, but the classic Alive. So and I had never seen it before. So I was like, ooh, and I was looking at that. And that cover's cool, too. And so I was like, all right. And I was like, man, this one's more expensive than the other records. I didn't know what double records were. So I bought it and I took it home. But I was so obsessed already with Kiss that I was like, I had to open it. So I unsealed the plastic and I was like, whoa, it opens up. And I was whoa, and that awesome pictures and everything. And there's a book in here. Oh, my God. And so I was looking at the book, and then I was like, there's two records. And so my little devious fourth grade budding rock and roller mind was like, hey, I only broke one record, man. I'm not going to give him two records. What? No way. Also, this cover is clearly way cooler.
Yeah.
And it has a book. So I took one. I don't remember if it was the first record or the second record, but I took one of those and I put it in the Destroyer sleeve and I went back to school and I was like, here you go. And I kept the other record and the cover of Alive in the booklet, which would actually be my undoing later. So being dishonest does not pay off. But so that was basically my intro to Kiss, and then I was off immediately.
Yeah, it's funny because I think I ended up getting a used record from Robert.
Did it have a hole in it? Because I gave him back the broken one, too.
It was actually the Ace solo record.
Oh, wow.
I don't know if he like got a better copy or something. But yeah, I mean, I still have it. Yeah, wow. The cover is all kind of, like, parts are, like, bent and there's creases all over it. And, but yeah, he gave that to me.
Nice.
Yeah, I'm like, whoa. Damn. But
that's
yeah,
cool.
Alive was my second record that I got.
Okay.
And that was, yeah, again, just like,
yeah, game changer for sure.
But mine, which I bought new,
yeah,
didn't have the booklet.
Oh, no.
And I was like, I didn't even know that there was supposed to be one with it.
Oh, man.
Until later. And then I think somebody gave me the booklet because they had it, but they didn't have the record. Here. I'm like, yes.
Score.
And now I think I've lost it again.
You can look at mine. I still have mine. Yeah, that's interesting. It's, I guess, we got into Kiss. Most of the world, I guess, was getting into them about that time, but we didn't know them when they were struggling up and comer band or anything like that. I think they were already like hitting that superstar, like Elvis, Evel Knievel. Evel Knievel. I don't know. I was trying to think of his other 70s. The, you know, pop culture phenomenon status where they were like more than a band. Mm-hmm. They were like, all of a sudden they were everywhere, on TV and
yes. We'll
also talk about, but, yeah. And so, but record wise, that was all I heard. Oh, I did hear one of my older cousins had a Live 2 on 8-track, which I think we mentioned on one of the podcasts. So I did hear a Live 2 on the 8-track, and I didn't know live albums or greatest hits. I didn't know what any of that stuff was. So all those songs, I didn't realize they were on other albums necessarily. Yeah. I was a dumb little kid. But so I think musically, Destroyer, one record. Oh, you know what? I must have kept the second record of Alive, because I do remember the Peter's drum solo.
what, 10-minute drum solo?
Yeah, which when we were kids, we just kept extending it, and it's like a half hour of drums, you know? Record's not even a half hour long, probably. But it seemed like it. We just kept going and going. So I heard Destroyer, the second half of Alive. I don't remember if I played the other record at all. I don't think I did. And part of Alive 2.
Mm.
And whatever I saw on TV, which on Paul Lynde, I think they played Detroit Rock City, King of the Nighttime World, and Beth.
So it was all like Destroyer.
Yeah. And they were in their Destroyer gear, which, gotta say, if any of you have not seen that footage, it's lip-synced, but it really encapsulates Kiss at that period, because they're just doing everything at once. Like, it's got the explosions, it's got Gene's jumping up and down like a frog, Paul's doing his Paul dancing, and Gene does the blood and the fire. It's all in there in like three songs. It's crazy. And then, you know, the mellow ballad. So I guess we'll get to the the bad part now. So as I've mentioned before, my dad was a preacher. My parents were pretty, not strict necessarily, but very straight laced. And they tolerated, for some reason, when I first started liking Kiss. I think they just didn't know. I'm sure they thought it was weird or whatever. But when I kept that Alive cover instead of giving it to Robert Thomas, which is what I should have done, for whatever reason, one day my mom was looking at it. And for those who don't know, the inside gatefold of Alive has on one side these supposedly handwritten notes by each member of KISS. And if you know KISS at all, you know that there's some questionable material written in those things, especially according to my mom. So she read those and just lost it. And I'm not sure how long I had had it, because I must have had the cards, or have at least started to buy the cards at that point. But I was buying like every 16 magazine that came out.
Dynamite.
Yeah, anything, because they were in like every issue.
Yep.
So so I had like a box already full of like KISS magazines and the posters and everything, and my one record and probably some other stuff. But yeah, so my mom saw that and it was over. KISS was over in my house. And they literally, sounds like a cliche, but they literally made me take my magazines and stuff out to the burn barrel in the backyard and toss them in the fire. Oh, it was so painful.
You're like, I'm hiding the cards.
Yeah, I kept the cards somehow. Or either they didn't, because I bought a lot of bubblegum cards, so maybe they just didn't realize. Because I was buying, like, Mork and Mindy. Yeah. Star Wars for sure. I had a huge, maybe they just thought I was buying Star Wars cards, but for whatever reason, I was able to save the KISS cards. All the other stuff was gone. It sucked. So KISS became a topic we did not discuss anymore in the house, which I guess will lead to the big 1978 TV extravaganza.
Just gonna say, like, my dad, you know, he hated most rock and roll.
Yeah.
And he'd always give me shit about listening to like KISS and, you know, that heavy rock.
Yeah.
But as long as I had my headphones on,
yeah,
I guess he didn't mind too much. And my mom was always just kind of like, it's just music.
Yeah.
You know, whatever. But that's what I'd always wear, my headphones, looking at the record covers.
Mm-hmm.
And then I must have been maybe through TV Guide.
Yeah.
I heard that they were doing like a TV movie. A
movie.
And I was like, what?
Yeah.
And yeah, this is 1978. And it was around Halloween, right?
Yeah.
Because I remember we went across the street to a neighbor's because they were having a party. You know, and I was really concerned. I was like, man, I have to watch this. I have to watch this movie. So I think I got shuffled off into like another room.
Yeah.
Maybe a living area. And yeah, I got to have the TV on. I was all scrunched up in front, you know, and people were talking to me a lot. I'm like, shh. Gotta listen.
Can't hear this incredible dialogue. Oh man.
But yeah, I was so excited.
Yeah, I was excited until my parents said I couldn't watch it.
Well, I, you know, being around our age then, it's you did miss a lot. But now that you have actually seen it, you're like,
yeah,
I'm sure, like, with the acting. Why didn't they win any awards, any Emmys?
The special effects. It's again, for those who don't know, it's a Hanna-Barbera production. It's which
weirdest thing.
Yeah, which should tell you something right away. I mean, it could have been like a Scooby-Doo movie.
Should have had Scooby-Doo. Yeah.
But if my parents had known it was going to be that ridiculous, they might not have cared. But it was years and years, as everyone knows, because KISS didn't want anything to do with it and suppressed it forever, that before I finally got to see it. But at the time, man, I was crushed. I was like really, really, really sad. I wanted to see it so bad. It was like a monumental thing, because at that point, even though my parents were trying to keep them from me, they were in like everything. Like Marvel Comics put out that KISS comic. I think they did too, actually. I would read like any magazine I was reading at the time seemed like probably had a KISS article or a ad because they're always selling something. Oh, in fact, I had a magazine that had an ad that had like the belt buckle.
I always wanted the belt buckle.
The logo. So,
but that's what I don't understand. It's like why they were so embarrassed by this, but yet here their faces are on garbage cans and quilts and kites.
Kites. The KISS transistor radio.
Yes.
Whoa. That's always one of those. Yeah. I mean, it was on. Yeah. I don't get it. And I don't know. I really don't know why. Well, I guess probably in 78, nobody foresaw like VCRs and DVDs later. And certainly not streaming services. So maybe they thought if they just didn't talk about it, it would
just be gone.
Go away.
Yeah.
But someone had the foresight to save it. And
yes, they did.
But yeah, for years in my mind, I was just like, I had missed probably the greatest movie ever made.
Yes. The KISS meets the Phantom of the Park is about an amusement park that what they were like low attendance or something. So they were going to book a rock band.
Yeah. Something like that. They're trying to, bring people to the park.
Yeah. So they book KISS.
The biggest band in the world.
But was he some kind of, he played like an evil scientist at the park, or was he?
He was the guy that made their animatronics.
Oh,
and he was
right.
Disgruntled about something, but I don't remember why.
I think them bringing rock music into this park because
instead of
wanted to keep it the way it was.
Right. And he probably thought his robots should be the main attraction.
Probably.
Yeah, but I remember, and it's a character actor. I can't think of his name right now, but you'd know him probably if you'd seen any movies from the 70s or 80s. And that's the plot. Or there's more, because he wants like revenge against KISS.
Yes,
for whatever reason. And then also there's some other like subplot that has to do with some kids, some like teenagers.
Oh, right.
That I to this day, even though now I've seen the movie a bunch of times, I still don't really know what was going on with that. But because for some reason that girl befriends KISS.
Well, of course.
But oddly, none of them hit on her. Because I think she actually was like trying to find her boy, like her boyfriend disappeared or something in the park.
Yeah, that's true. It's like the members of KISS will always respect a woman if she has a boyfriend.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That would stop them.
Yeah. So that's how you know this is fiction.
Maybe that's why they wanted to suppress it.
We don't even get any chicks in this movie. They don't either. There's like no, now that I think about it. But that's when they all like cemented those personas that they had. Which I still, so you got Ace. He's the spaceman. He's an alien. You got Gene. He's a demon.
Yep.
You got Peter. He's a cat.
Then you got Paul.
What is a star child?
I don't know.
You got a guy with a star on his eye.
Yeah.
Paul was never either of our favorites, in case you can't tell.
Yeah, it's like they had superpowers.
Yes.
And I remember Jeans was he could fly like a bat.
Yeah.
And shoot fire.
He shot fire, really bad effect fire.
Yeah. And Ace, he shot lasers?
He had lasers
of his eyes.
He also did, no, Paul's star eye shot a laser.
Right.
Ace, I did like out of his fingers or something. But he also like made a time warp or something like towards the end.
See, he's more important to the band than they realize.
But they don't even mention that. It's like one of those deals where, like, we need to get him out of this scrape. Hey, what if Ace has a time warp?
Yeah.
Or, okay.
It's like, really, he should have just time warped back to...
Yeah. Right when... just solve the whole thing.
And then Peter's was like some kind of cat.
I don't remember. Maybe he had a cat. Maybe he had the panther. Maybe turned into a panther, I don't remember.
See so many possibilities.
Yeah.
But then Paul, it's like, what, the lasers and then what? Oh, yeah. Let's, I'm going to dance.
He could purse his lips. Distract people with his ruby red lips.
That's right. He looked at, didn't matter who it was.
Yeah.
They would just instantly go,
it's the Star Child.
That's right. And then Ace shoots him with the laser.
Yeah. Pew. Gene roars. He did. He had a roar. He was like, roar. Oh, man. Ace barely spoke. When he did, he'd be like, ack.
Yeah. Do that or he'd cackle.
Yeah. Peter's voice is completely overdubbed.
Yeah, it's by like somebody apparently else. Apparently, it wasn't good enough.
And Paul's, unfortunately, Paul, because his acting is terrible. All their acting is terrible.
It is.
Everyone in the movie's acting is terrible.
Oh, yes.
And yet, I've watched it several times.
It's a wonderful train wreck.
It really is.
Oh, yeah. And then they play the show at the end. And
right. Well, it's the guy's robots. His plan is to have a fake kiss.
They fight him on stage, yeah. Right?
So they're playing. They come out on stage and the crowd thinks it's Kiss, but it's really the robots. And they start playing. It sounds like Hotter Than Hell, but they change the lyrics to Rip and Destroy.
Oh, right.
And it's all like, tear it down tonight. Rip, rip, rip and destroy. And it's kind of like off beat and stuff at a couple of spots. And the crowd instantly like turns on them. Boo. They just they're not having it. Yeah. And then the real Kiss like breaks free of wherever they're being held. And
right. Then the fight ensues.
The big fight where they fight themselves.
And then they win and then they play some songs.
Then they basically the exact same thing the crowd just saw happens, but this time they like it.
Yeah, even though they probably sounded the same.
Yeah, they pretty much did. But oh, that's also the wonderful scene where Ace's double is a black guy.
Oh, right.
If you're really looking, because they don't. He's got the face makeup on, but that's it.
Yeah, no, nothing on the hand.
Yeah, so you're like, oh, neck. It's hilarious. And I mean, you can tell anyway, because you can like, oh, that's clearly a wig on that guy. And but man, anyway, that's Kiss Meets Phantom of the Park. Watch it just to spite them, if nothing else.
Rent it. Rent the hell out of that movie. I think this is a good place to go. Hey. This is part one. Coming up, we're going to do part two, and you'll hear it sometime after part one.
When we darn well feel like releasing it.
That's right, because I have the feeling we're going to get into the decline.
Yeah, we'll have to. So.
Although we'll start with, oh, no. We'll see what we do.
We'll see. There's still a lot to be talked about. So, all right. Hope you enjoyed part one.